Hello everyone, I'm Kamu, your host, and this is the Multifaceted African Girls Podcast, the show where we share untold stories of incredible women making waves in their daily lives, from activists to entrepreneurs and beyond. We will learn what it means to believe in the power of she, empowered women empowering generations. Okay, hi everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode. Joining me today is Kgaogelo Potoane. We're gonna just jump straight into it. So just give us a brief overview about who you are, how your foundation was laid, and how you grew up, basically just your background.
Okay, so hey guys. Okay, so my name is Kgaogelo, like Kamu said, and I basically grew up in a single parent household. My dad died when I was 4, and I grew up with 3 siblings, and my mom got remarried, you know, and I gained more siblings. And yeah, I grew up pretty well, I would say. I mean, there's, you know, obviously drama with every family, but I think my mom really did her best.
Of course there's drama with
every family. You know what I mean? there's always something. So, but my mom really did her best, and she really tried to give us the best of everything. You know, there were no gaps that I can identify, except obviously like a missing parent, you know, but like that wasn't in her control. So, but with the things that she did have control over, zero complaints. And yeah, and then I finished school and did what I'm doing now, speech therapy and audiology, and then hit rock bottom and then found my passion.
I mean, the carpe diem of life, seizing the day type of thing. We always find ourselves hitting rock bottom before we actually realize, hey, there's more to life than
just what I'm doing.
So describe first your rock bottom.
Oh yeah, no, my rock bottom was dramatic. So I think growing up I always knew that there was something up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But because I was not exposed to anything mental health, I couldn't put my finger on it. I always felt like something would happen, or there was always something wrong with me, you know, and I was just like suicidal from a very young age, but not because anything was triggering it per se. Like if something small would happen, it didn't take much to trigger it, let's just say that. And I think my first suicide attempt was, I was either 12 or 13, you know, and so I always knew something was wrong. I always felt like I was, like something was gonna go wrong.
Yeah,
you know, I had issues with like detachment and attachment to people and stuff, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And when I was 21, we had like a big family situation, and I didn't hit rock bottom, but I went somewhere.
You tipped.
I tipped. I stopped going to class. And because of the career path that I chose, our class was very small.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're not there, especially if you're as loud as I am, it's very noticeable when you're not in the class. So one of my lecturers noticed, contacted me, got me help on campus, got me in touch with a psychologist, and then the psychologist diagnosed me with major depression. And by then, like, I knew about depression, but it was just very foreign. I was just like, imagine. And then she then spoke about medication. And then I was just like, nah, girl. No, sorry, can't help you. And then I just completely stopped going. And, you know, obviously when you feel like you're okay again, you feel like you can do this. And then I finished. And then CompServio came. And that was supposed to be the best year of my life. Like, I'm finally getting my own money. Moving out. You know, getting my own place. It's supposed to be like a great year.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was just, that is the year I hit rock bottom. And I had a fairly okay year, and I think halfway through the year I was diagnosed with hypertension, but also I think because I was so stressed out.
Yeah.
And then like I had like a major life event happen, and I completely But I didn't tip over immediately.
Yeah.
I took it in, you know, I packed it away like most people do. You know, I dealt with it a little bit, packed it away. And then I moved on, you know, but it kept eating at me, you know, and because there were already underlying mental health issues, like I just wasn't dealing. And then it started affecting work, I started losing weight, I started drinking a lot, and then I just got really suicidal.
Yeah.
And I completely hit rock bottom. To a point where, you know, when people that don't understand mental health know that you need to get help.
Yeah.
They don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But they know how to get. Yeah, this is not working out. So my friends and my family sort of were trying to help and whatnot. And we got me into an institution.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder.
Mm.
Major depression and general anxiety. And
okay, so for people who don't know these diagnoses, can you just like give a brief explanation of what MDD is, major depressive disorder is, and borderline
personality disorder
is?
Okay, so borderline personality disorder, like most people, when I heard it, I wasn't okay with depression, but I was more settled with the term MDD.
Of course, because I mean,
Socially acceptable.
I mean, we all go through phases and periods of our time where we are really depressed.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So and we just don't go get diagnosed for it. But actually, if you look at it.
And people are okay with it. Especially young people now. To a point where it's an adjective now.
Yes.
Which I really don't like.
Yes.
But
it's been thrown around like this.
But, I feel so depressed. So as soon as like people hear depression, they're not like startled anymore.
Mm.
But a personality disorder, I was just like, no. So she was like, no, we can do a psychiatric test, you know, and we really did like the whole thing. And I was still there. I was still institutionalized. And yeah, so basically borderline personality disorder is the inability to regulate emotions.
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. It's the inability to regulate emotions. And because of that, the people tend to have like attachment issues. With people, they tend to have very crazy, like hectic, hot on, off, hot cold relationships with people.
Yeah.
They tend to be very impulsive, but because they cannot regulate like how they feel, they have these disassociation where they get out of touch with reality.
Yeah.
Here and there, they very suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
They have self-harm behaviors. Either like actual self-harm where they hurt themselves physically or partake in behaviors that harm them, like reckless driving, drinking, you know, impulsive sex. And listen, I fit the bill, you know. And you know, you see it as, listen, I'm liberated, I'm wild.
Yes.
You don't necessarily go,
of course,
there's an issue here.
Yeah.
You know, nothing against people that are sexually liberated
of
or,
course,
you
yes.
know, but like with, in my sense, it was a problem because it wasn't the essence of who I was, because I felt really horrible after like, you know, partaking in all these activities.
Yeah.
So yeah. And then with MDD, it's basically like prolonged, I don't want to say sadness, but prolonged negative emotions, you know, where you feel empty, where you feel really like sad, but it's prolonged. It has to be like more than 2 weeks consecutively. And you know, the people that are depressed don't enjoy, you know, activities that they used to enjoy anymore. They isolate themselves, they don't eat well, or they eat too much, you know, they sleep a lot, or they don't really sleep a lot, you know, anymore. But they completely change the way they interact with the environment, you know. But because of the sense of either guilt or sadness or resentment towards themselves or other people, but it's like prolonged though. It's not just I feel sad today because something happened. Or and also depression is not always triggered. I think that's something that people also need to know. Sometimes there's actual chemical imbalances in your brain that cause you to be depressed. So, you know, sometimes you wake up, you're not yourself, and you're not feeling, or you're having an episode, and people are like, what happened? Nothing. So, what's wrong, you know?
It just happened,
I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And because people also need to realize that it's like a brain, the organ, your brain has an issue.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily like moody or
let's just be frank here. We grow up in black environments where when our parents aren't really accustomed to, you're depressed, you have this. But no, why are you moody so today? Yeah, and that time, you're just like, no, that's not what's happening. But explaining it as well is just so exhausting.
Because people don't get it.
Yeah.
I've actually had people very close to me go, but you're addicted, ne, to being depressed. You enjoy. How could I possibly enjoy being in this state? Like,
yeah.
How does that make sense? So, yeah, that's basically how I define them for myself. Because there's, like, textbook, you know, DSM-5 definitions. But that's basically how I think.
Yeah. So, how then did your rock bottom influence you to becoming empowered, to becoming this mental health activist that I know? Because, I mean, you share your story so authentically. It blows my mind. I mean, you record from your car going to work and you inspire people. And I'm like, yo, how fellow is today? You wake up with so much energy the most times. I'm like, Lord, maybe, you know, if we can also be so empowered. How did you get from that space of, okay, now I'm being diagnosed. Now I'm having to take medication. How did you empower yourself to making it such a testimony and a testimony that you could share with other people, not only with yourself, but with other people? Because that's a very private space, hey?
It is. And people see mental health as something embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, it has so much shame.
I mean, does it not give you that? Did you not experience that? I think this is another question just for the end. Did you not experience the isolation? Especially after being diagnosed. Because social isolation is
real. It is. Especially if... I think what made it worse for me was my personality.
Mm.
You know, because I'm loud. And you, like, we've worked together.
Yes.
I'm like a ball of fire on a daily. So, you know, so there's people that knew me before I got diagnosed, you know. And people that knew me after, you know. And... people just didn't understand how.
Mm.
I'm sorry, how do you have mental health issues when you are this person?
Yeah.
When you are like this, when you meet people. And I'm like, but me being a happy person or me being a person of this kind of personality does not deem me unworthy of having an issue. You know what I mean? Because it's not something that you choose.
Exactly.
Not something that anyone wants.
Yeah.
You know, but you get to a point where you accept it and you deal with it and you now try to help yourself. And I think what got me to a point of being empowered was I had to stop completely in my tracks, you know, and start filling my cup. Because as much as I was, you know, going out and happy, I was not okay. That was like the bottom line. I was not okay. And I was literally heading to a point of no return. Like, I was incredibly suicidal. I had a plan, you know, to a point where my friend asked me, like, she was like, you know, you really sound suicidal. And I'm like, yeah. And like out of curiosity, I think she wanted to see how hectic.
Yeah.
But she was like, but how would you do it? And like, I gave her like a set plan with details and, you know, and then she was like, okay, no, we're in trouble. We need to get help, you know? And, so I had to stop and one, remove the mask. And actually acknowledge that, listen, you're not okay.
Mm.
And you don't need to be okay for anyone else.
Yeah.
You're just not okay. So take off your mask and start dealing. And then I had to, like, unpack all those issues, you know, that were so neatly packed away, you know, and just stored in a very beautiful closet.
Because we're humans. I mean, I know I have my closet of neatness.
Well, you don't want anyone touching it.
Categorized. Exactly.
Well, you're like, please leave my closet alone. I'm okay. I'm good. So I had to go back to that closet, open it up, and literally start pulling things out. And the only way I could do it was through therapy.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, from, like, your childhood.
Hey.
Till you, like, in your mid-20s. How do you even start? Wait, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had to start filling my cup. I had to start acknowledging that I have a problem.
Mm.
I also had to take responsibility of some of the events that took place. Because not everything was done to me.
Yeah.
Some things were done by me. So I had to take responsibility for the part that I played and actually choose to start healing. I think with the first time I saw a therapist, I hadn't made the decision to start healing. I went because I was told to go. But I was told, go to a therapist because you're going to fail the year. And I'm like, okay.
Woo. No, we can't have that happening. You know? We can't have that onto our plates. Let's go.
Let's go. But I think this time around, I was desperate for healing. Yeah. I was desperate to do the work. I was prepared to do the work. And I think that is such, that for me was like a game changer, because it doesn't help for you to seek help or to, you know, try and do different things if you're not prepared to do the work. Healing is difficult. Healing is not fun. Healing is actually more, there were times where I thought, I think trying to be okay is more difficult than actually just going through it.
Exactly. No, I have to agree with you, because I think, I don't know if it's a conditioning that we've had as women, especially as women of all different colors, different races, nations, we have this stoic mbogoto thing that we love and cherish so much, so we would put up the forefront of we're okay, whereas deep inside we're a little child that just wants to be held, and that's what's happening. And it's just like, I heard this analogy that we're like a volcano, but a non-active volcano. It's just hidden. It's sitting there until that moment when it erupts. And when it erupts badly.
And it burns everything in its way.
Exactly.
So, I think... Also, I don't subscribe to the notion of being strong. I decided that's also when I decided, you know what? I don't have to be strong.
Yeah.
I can be resilient. I can be brave. I can be courageous, you know, but I don't have to be strong.
Mm.
I don't want to have strength. I don't want to, you know, kick the door open and do this. I want it to be okay for me to crawl through the door. You know, I want it for me, like, I need to be able to roll through the door. I need to kick it open and run in and, you know, just start fighting the demons and the whatever. I don't always have strength for that.
Mm.
I don't always have the ability to do that. So I also had to make it okay for me to walk this path the way, you know, that suits me.
Yeah.
And I think I actually took, before I started, like, the mental health initiative that I started now, I think I was healing for a good 2 years, you know, with just me. Just me, just putting into me, investing, you know, into myself, and also creating boundaries. You know, it was difficult, and you also need to start choosing yourself.
Yeah.
You know, before anyone else, before your mom, before your friends, before your partner, before you have to choose yourself, and it is such a difficult thing.
Mm-hmm.
Practicing your no, saying I had to become that person for myself, and when all of that was done, I didn't choose to start the initiative. It was kind of thrown in my face.
Okay, tell us more about Not Alone SA. So who threw it in your face, girl?
Girl, I'm not gonna lie and be like, oh, I was just inspired. I woke up one day and I'm like, oh, I wanna help other people. No, that is not what happened. I'm not even gonna lie and all front or my plan was to just share my story.
Yeah.
That was it. I was just like, you know what? And I had this deep sense of, I just want to share my story. Maybe it'll help someone on social media. That was it. That was my plan. That was the big goal. You know, but also I thought I still had so much shame connected to my story, especially because of what I went through, because of what I was going through. I also did things that I wasn't proud of, and you know, and also having to acknowledge publicly, you know, or admit that, listen, I have mental health disorders.
Mm-hmm.
To a point where, you know, my friends would tell me, yo, happy I met someone, you know, a little off from school, and they were just so worried because they heard you were sick. And I was like, I'm sick. Why am I sick? No, they heard it was shared between you, you're not okay, you know. But after like sharing all my stories, and I didn't know if it was something that I'd be comfortable with, because I knew it would come with a lot.
It would, you know, especially on a public platform.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm not really sure. Oh. You know, so I sat on my idea. But I just feel like it was like God just put it in my heart.
Yeah.
So it really bothered me. It was heavy. It was a heavy, heavy, heavy purpose on me. And I was just like, oh, Lord, can we just let it go?
Yeah.
You know, or maybe like next year. This was 2019. So I was just like, listen, maybe like next year. Or like, yo, can you just like come down? And then I shared this with like a random guy on Facebook who has an initiative. I was like, hey, dude, listen, this is what I want to do. You know, I just want to share my story on. And he was like, have to do it, because if you don't do it, someone else is going to do it and you're going to feel bad, you know. So, and then I just put it up. I just put my story up, and I had people, like, you know, connect with the story and inbox me. And then there were too many people to respond to. So I thought, let me create a WhatsApp group where we can then create, like, a community of people, and we just, like, help each other, like, with day-to-day. And then that happened, and then it just sort of, like, grew by itself. And then we, you know, and then the sort of, maybe let's actually start getting outside help and doing, like, camps and picnics and whatever came about. So I really didn't, I didn't have, like, a plan and a,
all you had was that one notion of, I just want to share my story.
That's it. And everything else. And I mean, that's when, like, the school stuff, also, like, going to schools and talking to, like, the kids there. And you'd be surprised, Gamal, how much these kids go through. And they don't know what's going on with them, you know?
Exactly. Hey?
It's really, it's heart-wrenching. So that's literally, I think, Not Alone SA created itself.
Yeah.
I really didn't. I didn't play a big role. No, that was when I created it.
You know, you say you didn't play a big role, but I mean, your whole life was literally, it literally catered for Not Alone SA to become. And thank you for creating that platform. Honestly, thank you for creating that platform, because we get to listen in. Because, I mean, we all have our struggles. Whether we want to admit it or not, we all have our deep struggles. I think, I remember last year, the year before that, I was also diagnosed with a depressive period. And the lady was like, okay, we're not going to diagnose you officially, but right now you're going through depression. And I was like, okay, what now?
I think we're working together
Together then. And I was like, what now? Lord, what now? And for me, it was really encouraging to hear you especially speak more about it. I think that's when I understood, like, when I spoke to you, I was like, okay, you know what, there's light
the world.
At the end of the tunnel, it's okay, it's not the end of the world. Okay, but let's go back a little bit to your story, right? What, in your unpacking, in your period of, I had to unpack that closet, what was the major thing? You don't need to, like, name all of them if you are not comfortable. But what was that major thing that you believe contributed to all your mental cycles? That one thing that you needed to sit down and deal with and actually come face to face with? Because I think that our vulnerability comes from acknowledging those things. So if you are kind to share with us, like, what was that one thing, and how did you practically then have to deal with, I understand the therapy, but which routes did you have to then take?
I think for me, so before I actually answer the question, the one thing that I want to say is I've taught myself to share my story, like, as authentically, as pure, as just like as bare as it is, because it takes away the shame, you know. It takes away, because shame is also why people just hold back and they don't. There's so much liberation in just saying your story and wearing it and being proud of it, because I'm not that person anymore, and I've conquered, and you know, so, and I'm still conquering and I'm still fighting, and so that's why, like, I've just become such an open book. Oh, so so the one thing that
I love open books.
So the one thing that I really, really had to sit and deal with was my, so I think where the issue actually started was not necessarily my relationship with my dad, but the way I perceived my dad. You know, my mom did this amazing job of painting my dad out to be a hero, you know, but that took away the human element of him, you know, it took away his right to make mistakes and his right to disappoint and to be human. And those are all the things that make us human. And I think because of the underlying BPD, when I found out things about him and when I found out things about the things that he did, but that affects everyone else, it really, like, it sent me, you know. And also it then had such an impact on now how I viewed myself, because I felt like such a big part of my identity was stripped away, you know, and I really had issues with me, you know. And that's what people didn't understand, because to a point where my mom was like, no, don't fight like my battles, you know, and I'm like, I'm not fighting your battles, I'm fighting my battles. Yes. I'm really struggling with this. Ooh, for girl. Me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? For me. You know, and my siblings were fine with it. My siblings were like, what to me? It's not deep, babes, like just let it go. And I was like, but it is, because I really, everything that I believe about men, yeah, and how men should be and how my relation with men, and it was really rooted in like my foundation with my dad, yeah, or how I perceived my dad, rather, or you know, how I knew my dad to be with us. And now that all of that is stripped away, I really am struggling with even like my own identity, yeah, now. And to a point where I remember I even told my mom, I was like, you know, to a point where I'm so disgusted with the blood that I have. You know, if I could, I would like just get a blood transfusion.
Unfortunately, guys, that is not medically possible. You know? So.
But it was that deep, you know? Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I really had to deal with, like in therapy. Yeah. And because of that, I started like lashing out, not just at people, but like with my behavior. You know, and then I had to also, now when I started therapy, I also had to deal with that. Taking responsibility is so hard. It's really easy. It was easier for me to go, no, but my dad, no, but if he didn't, then I wouldn't. But I had to go, but he didn't do it, you did.
Yeah.
There's certain things that he really didn't do, you did.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to, I think that was also very difficult for me, having to sit and take responsibility.
Sure.
The unpacking of that was heavy, I think. Yeah. And listen, therapy will leave you broken. Okay? It will leave you bare.
Contrary to popular belief,
therapy will break you.
Of course. I mean, I think that is a space where you are most like vulnerable. Bare and vulnerable. So you will feel broken. But I don't think a lot of people understand.
No,
that.
They think
it's supposed to put your life together. And it's not that. So
it's
taking
not.
Responsibility.
Facing
how does,
yourself.
How does taking responsibility look like? So were you like, okay, you know what? I'm going to sit down and like list out and be like, okay, you know what? This I did wrong. And then were you immediately able to take that responsibility?
Oh, God, no.
Or tell me, how was that experience?
I think, like I said, blame shifting is the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
Listen, girl. Yeah. Going, no, but it's everyone else's fault. That is, well, you know. But having to sit down with yourself, because that's literally where it started for me. My therapist is, like, I've had her since, right?
Yeah.
Since, like, when she diagnosed me and everything. And that lady is stunning. But she will make you work, okay? And if you're not ready, she will pause therapy till you're ready to work. Because, like, I love her to bits. And she literally forced me. I remember there was a day where she was like, you need to write like your life story for me.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, well, girl, from like when?
I'm no, so no, right.
Yeah. Also, right, I have a job, ma'am. I have a life. I don't have time to write. You know, and I had to sit and it was so incredible, because what pain does and what mental health illness does sometimes is it blocks out memories from your past, and it blocks out memories from like the life that you've lived. So by going back and really sit, I remember the first time I went back to her, I wrote her like a 2-pager.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know what? No.
Your life story is on the 2 pages.
We're not
girl.
Doing this
what
today.
Doing?
You're gonna go back and you're gonna be serious.
Yeah.
And I was really sad, and I think I gave her a 2-pager because I was so scared to sit with myself. I was so scared to sit with my past. You know, I was really scared to sit. It was just easier to go, I mean, let me just write down the memories that were pleasant for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was really scared to dig. And I think that's when sitting down with myself started, when I actually had to dig and sit with the uncomfortable moments, with the painful moments, with the moments I would really rather just not remember. Mm. And she was like, and also when you're writing down your life story, write down what happened and how it made you feel. And one of the biggest things that were really hard to do were taking responsibility for the feelings that I felt.
Sure.
Because I had literally pushed it on someone else, I had given other people responsibility for my feelings and for how I felt and how I dealt with things, you know. But she was like,
sure.
Bring it back, babes, bring it back to you. there were certain things that you allowed, and you need to be okay with acknowledging that, and you need to be okay with giving people what is due to them,
yeah,
but also taking what's due to you, you know. And that was so difficult for me. I think that was literally what was most difficult. And then I had to forgive myself,
yeah,
which is more difficult than forgiving other people.
Definitely. Definitely. No doubt.
Listen, and once you sit and you acknowledge that this was me,
yeah,
that is hard. That is really hard. And it changes your whole reality as well, you know. And it also taught me that forgiveness is not a overnight thing.
Yeah.
You know, you need to, like, I had to sit with me, sit with my feelings, and really work through them.
Yeah.
And one thing at a time, you know, just work with what happened in 28 February 1999. And then, and then work my way up, you know, till moments we have, it's now me, and I'm like, okay, so, yeah. And it took years.
Yeah.
It's not even, it's not like I took responsibility in like a month, or it took years.
Mm.
It took years to sit down with me. It took years for me to be okay with me, finally. You know,
sure.
I think I was tolerating myself for the biggest part of my life.
I mean, we do that.
Yeah, I wasn't in love
frequently
with myself. Hmm. I was tolerating myself. I was like, I mean, since you here, since I'm you, I mean, we could do this life thing.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the kind of relationship I had with myself. And
yeah.
that's, I think, why I allowed people to also do what they, you know, did to me, and allowed myself to do certain things. Because it was just like, I mean, since we're already doing this, might
yeah.
as well, you know. So I had to actually start loving me. But I had to be okay with all the parts that were me. I had to be okay with all the parts that were dark and that were sad and that were guilty and that I wasn't really proud of. And I had to really meet all those people
yeah.
and be okay with all of them to be able to go, listen, I love all of you.
Mm.
And I'm okay with all of you. And I forgive all of you. And that's when... And listen, it's really not a... Today, tomorrow, reshuffle, we move. It's
yeah.
hard, and it's heartbreaking, and but it's possible to go, you know what? I'm to a point where I really didn't think I was pretty.
Mm.
I didn't think, and people think you're
and
fishing.
You're gorgeous.
Thanks, girl.
She's not fishing. She's gorgeous.
But people actually think you're fishing.
Yeah.
You know, people actually think, oh, Mara, you know, Miss.
Mm.
Wait, really? No.
Yeah.
You know, because you have issues with yourself to a point where your internal struggles really start becoming exterior as well. They start
mm-hmm.
becoming external. And it really, like, even the way I treated myself, like, in terms of the things that I said to myself,
ooh.
Not just to me, but to other people as well about me.
Yeah.
You know, that those were all testimonies of my relationship with myself.
Ooh, girl.
And, yo, I had a really love-hate relationship with myself. I really, like, it was just that I was tolerant.
Yeah.
I was an abusive partner to myself, you know? So I had to really sit and acknowledge that and commit to myself again and be okay with me and start
mm.
building. But we had to start literally, we had to break down this castle that we built on clouds and really start building a foundation. And it took years. And we're still building.
Yeah.
I'm not
dead.
There are days where I wake up and I'm like, oh! And I have to go, wait, nope, we're not, no, remember? It's teamwork.
Yeah.
We were doing this together.
Yeah.
You still, you know? And yeah. So it's still a work in progress. Still not there.
Like, honestly, I'm just listening to you and I'm like, yo, I don't think a lot of people realize how many times you articulated what a lot of people feel right now. And I've had days where I feel like that. And I wouldn't think, you know, I'm being abusive to myself. I think, it is what it
life.
Is. Girl, you don't look good today. You know, not even today, like just this whole week. Girl, you've been shady. You've been looking like this. And we don't realize that it's actually feeding into
yes.
our system. And the more we speak it, we think it, we become it. And we can't recognize ourselves.
And reality becomes it.
Literally, everything that you see changes. Oh my gosh.
The people you attract as well. Literally, your entire reality is a testament of your relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
If you, that like, it's everything. Even the things that you participate in, you know, the things that you aspire for, all a testament of how you relate to yourself.
Shit, you are serving us today. Okay. Lord. Okay, so now, okay, let's talk about then self-love. So now, how does it look like to you? How do you speak to yourself now? Are you more kinder? Do you like write notes for yourself? How does it look like to you? Because I think that, I know it's a thing that's now advocated for, which is a good thing in the community, but not a lot of people are able to break past that barrier yet. But how do you then start speaking to yourself in a loving way, in a way where you just like, okay, you know what, we're doing all good,
we're okay,
man.
We're
okay.
I think so when I started this whole self-love journey,
yes,
you know, it was more, I don't want to lie, it was very like social media. Gotta go do my nails,
of
girl.
Course,
gotta take a bubble bath, you know. Just go do my hair.
Look at the tutu, man.
You know what
I mean?
He
went the more.
He went the more. Look at the part. You know, it was more. Also, like doing your affirmations,
yeah,
like on a daily. You know, and those are all good things. Those are all part of self love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think with me, when I actually started. Or when I actually had the true test of self-love,
yeah,
is when I was very close to rock bottom again,
mm,
right? And self-love for me is allowing myself to be,
mm,
at the time and still giving myself an overflow of love. Loving myself a little bit extra,
yeah,
you know, on days. Because when you're good, it's very easy to love yourself. I mean,
of
you look
course
good, you smell
like
good,
honey,
feel good. Why would you not love yourself? You know, it's self-love is really easy,
yeah,
you know, and it's really easy to choose yourself when everyone else is choosing you, you know.
Mm.
It's very easy to,
yes,
pick you and love you, and when your environment favors,
yeah.
So self-love for me counts most on days when I'm not okay.
Mm.
It counts most on days when I feel isolated, or I have to really stand by me and stand and advocate for me, and self-love for me looks like boundaries,
mm,
which was the biggest thing for me because of my personality. I was a people pleaser. Whatever you want to do, I want to do. Let's go. You
let's
know?
Do it.
Let's do it. Exercising my no with,
yeah,
everyone, you know, and getting out of situations that make me feel crappy,
mm,
you know, leaving people that I care about and that I love because I don't love how they love me. I don't appreciate how they love me.
Sure.
Not because there's anything wrong with them. I just don't like how I'm loved by them. Having to choose me in moments like that. Having to, like I said, love myself a little bit extra. And not just going, oh, let's do this today. Let's fight. And loving myself enough to take off my boxing gloves for the day.
Yeah.
Going, no, I'm not okay. I'm actually not okay. And because I'm not okay, I'm not going to work.
Mm.
I'm going to sit with my feelings. I'm going to honor my feelings. And I'm just going to cry. I'm going to stay here for a little bit. And I think that's also one thing that I really struggled with. Because every time I felt, you know, a little bit depressed. Or I just thought, get up, girl. Let's do this. Let's,
yeah,
do this. And that's not always the case. Sometimes I realized that I had to sit and go, how are you feeling? How are you really doing?
Mm.
Why do you feel like that? It's okay. Stay there. Not too long, though, because then it starts becoming toxic.
Yes.
But stay there for a day.
Mm,
stay there.
Mm.
I remember with the situation that we spoke about, you know, like with my ovulation and stuff, I gave myself 3 days. I was,
yeah,
like, listen. And got my cried every day for 3 days. And I still did my affirmations, though. I still did my affirmations. Didn't believe them.
But you
still
did
them. Did my affirmations. You know, I still journaled. And I still did, like things that helped me cope, like,
yeah,
I still participated in my coping mechanisms even when I really didn't want to do them. And that's also a part of self-love.
Mm.
A part of self-love is also reflecting and setting boundaries for yourself, not just for other people, but for yourself.
Exactly.
Going, because of how I value myself now, because of the love that I have for myself, I will not, not just I will not allow, just I will not.
Yeah.
I will not do this. I will not do that. I will not love like this. I will not. You know, choosing to just honor your higher self a lot of the time.
Mm.
You know, and I mean, you know, doing your hair, doing your nails, you know. But it's more of committing more to your relationship with yourself,
yeah,
and investing in that. And that's actually, I think, you know, like now, I'm on a social media break for like, this is like, I'm going into my second week.
Yes.
And you know, like, I got a lot of feedback going, how, but now, like, you're mourning.
Yeah,
videos.
Like, listen.
What's girl?
I also saw that and I was like, how, Mara.
Okay, take time out, but can you post in the morning and then go away? Can you just do that? And I was like, but now, I have to choose me.
Of course.
You know, I have to choose to take my attention away from certain things or take my,
yeah.
my energy and invest it in me because I need it.
Mm.
And once I'm okay, how about you? And you know, a lot of motivational speakers will tell you, what's in the cup is for me.
The overflow.
Please, by all means, you know? And self-love is also realizing, I think my cup is depleting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Pause. Stop giving. It's not selfish. You just stop giving. You just stop giving.
Mm.
And you start filling your cup up again.
Yeah.
If that means isolating yourself a little bit, taking time out for a little bit, you know, just being all about you for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then once you start overflowing again, then you can, you know, insert yourself. And that's literally what I'm doing now. And I think that's also, again, self-love for me.
That is so beautiful. Listen, I've never heard of self-love like that, and I think it's really beautiful for me. Because we're so used to, oh, girl, go run yourself a bubble bath. I mean, that is beautiful as well.
Gorgeous,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, I think the setting the boundaries for me is what I take away from what you just said. And setting the boundaries with yourself as well. Because it's okay, I can set boundaries with other people. I mean, don't you dare remember that video. But like with yourself, you kind of like, oh man, that's niche, man. And then you just live, but you don't realize that you actually are having that toxic relationship with yourself, and you need to actually set boundaries with yourself. But that is powerful. Hey. Ooh, okay. Let me see.
I'm getting so excited.
Okay, so the last big question is, now that you are here, right, now that you are a mental health activist, now that you are so proud in where you are, where your foundation is, like now that your foundation is set, how do you plan on navigating purpose from henceforth? How, like, what's your vision, and what, where do you see yourself? Yeah, which platforms do you see yourself? I believe in the power of the tongue.
Hallelujah.
I believe in it so much so that, you know, girls, speak it and you shall see it and it shall become. So where are you seeing yourself? Where are you seeing Not Alone is saying? Where are you seeing, what are you seeing yourself do and impact?
So firstly, with my recovery journey, I think I see myself as more of the higher version of myself that I, you know, imagine, because the recovery journey is a journey.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't even know if it ends.
You know, I think this is just a note for our listeners. Can, like, for all our community, actually, not even our listeners alone, let's try to be so kind to ourselves that we stop becoming destination chasers, because this is a journey. We really need to show grace to ourselves.
All the time.
Is a journey.
And you might walk like 1,000 steps, you know,
yeah.
And then take 800 back.
Yeah,
that's okay. That is honestly okay. And I think that's where I'm at right now. I'm really just with where I see myself just in the future. It's just me being okay with this journey.
Yeah,
you know, and it's a little bit hard to comprehend and accept, and it is for everyone. It's not like I started therapy and I started taking meds and I was like, oh yay, I
sorted.
Defaulted countless times. I can't even tell you the amount of times I've defaulted
from
medication. I've stopped therapy because I thought I was okay, you know, like I've literally gone through the motions, you know, before I actually started committing 100%. So I think in terms of that, my recovery journey, just being more of who I see myself as, you know, and I see growth. There's growth every year. There's growth all the time, you know.
Mm.
And in terms of just how I envision my life as a mental health activist, I really, and I know it's going to happen, you know, just be like global in terms of like advocating for mental health, you know, and just inspiring people to commit to themselves and to commit to their journeys and to be proud about their story, to be proud of their story and to be proud of who they are and what they've conquered and what they're conquering. So if, you know, I can inspire, I don't even need to know about it, but if I can inspire people to celebrate and embrace this journey, then listen, I really feel like I'm in. You know?
Yeah.
And in terms of not alone, I think we are growing every year, which is so overwhelming, like in terms of just the good feelings it comes with. It is such an honor, you know, to, I feel like God just chose me for this purpose, which is not easy, because giving yourself out like that is really, it takes a lot. It takes
a lot. And people don't understand that, like, especially when you're doing for people.
It takes a lot.
It takes a lot.
It takes a lot. Like committing to walking. Because I think not alone is, I think the part that is a little bit scary about it is you are walking people's journeys with them.
Yes.
You are literally a part of people's lives. You know what I mean? It's scary because, you know, how you are to them might affect literally how.
Yes.
And that is so scary. And having that kind of responsibility is just, you know, but it's so far so good. You know, I mean, we have almost 70 people in our group now.
Yeah.
So, I'm so, that's like a big number. You know,
that
so
is close a big to number. Like 100 that people. That is a big number.
Just, you know, and I really would like us to do more for the community, especially like with the underprivileged community, because mental health doesn't stop, you know, in the burbs or co-locationing or in like the really uppity townships, or it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop with people that have social media. It doesn't stop with people that have access to the internet. You know, it affects people that are remote.
Yeah.
It affects people that don't even know what's happening to them. You know, so just my goal is to reach everyone, you know, so to do more. And I think COVID makes it so difficult, but to reach especially young kids in schools.
Yeah.
In like, sick, I mean, depression starts at like the age of 14.
Literally.
So that's really early, you know, so to reach even primary school kids, secondary school kids more, because we had started, but it's just more difficult now with COVID, to do more self-empowering camps, you know, detox camps, with like psychologists, psychiatrists, just to equip, you know, have like a 3-day camp or 2-day camp to equip people to walk this journey, because not everyone has access to psychologists or psychiatrists, or not even has like the funds for it.
Not everybody even knows what they do, so you know, by the time you go there, you're like,
so people to just be equipped a little bit, you know. And I think my biggest goal, so because we're doing like camps, hikes, picnics, you know, so just do more events just to help empower and also to show people that, listen, you're not alone. So to create a community, you know, of support and tolerance and love and patience, you know, that for me is the biggest goal. But the biggest goal for Not Alone is to be able to create a platform where people can access help.
Yeah.
So, listen, I really just want to create a network of like psychiatrists, psychologists, pro bono, sponsored.
Yes.
It doesn't matter, you know, but for people to know that, listen, this is where I can go, connect with other people, but also get help for myself, you know. So that is the biggest goal, to just get as much help for people as possible. And just for people to be okay with their journeys. I think that's the most important thing for me. So we're going to grow on a global scale, and people are going to know about mental health and about the people, you know, that are just affected by it.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the goal for us.
And that is beautiful. Listen, we are backing you 110%. So if you need us to show up, we will show
up. Guys, we just had a picnic now. So but we're gonna do more. We definitely gonna do more.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Okay, so we're gonna just do a quick fire round question, and then I'm gonna ask you questions, like literally short questions. You can just give the first answer that comes to your head. Basically.
But that indecisive brain, my gosh.
Okay. If you had to choose money or purpose?
Purpose. Purpose comes with money.
Every time I ask this question, people justify it. They're like, no, purpose comes with money. I'm saying,
well, if you do what you love and what you made for, purpose, it's more for, it's fulfilling.
Okay.
So without the money, purpose is fulfilling.
Because sometimes purpose comes with absolutely no money at the beginning.
No. A lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, but it's fulfilling.
Okay, cool. Nature or the ocean?
Bush nature
or the ocean?
Ooh, bush nature. No, bush nature. Ooh, being isolated and alone. Yes. Bush nature, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, the three pillars that you base your life on. Three things that you base your
life
on.
God, self, love.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's
God,
so beautiful.
Self, love.
Okay. And the last one. The last one is, okay, if you were to name the season that you're in right now, what would you call it?
Transitioning. Definitely. Transitioning.
From what to what?
Seriously. From the norm.
Yeah.
To Batum Father God. And now what is happening? Okay. Since we're here, let's embrace it, let's love and let's learn and let's grow. But yeah, how Father God? Wow, man, this is a bit hectic.
Listen, it has been such an honor to have you on this platform, on this podcast. You have
been amazing.
Thank you for honoring, firstly, our invitation. Thank you for sharing yourself so vulnerably and so authentically. Thank you for allowing me to step into your light. Because I believe that people really exude a light. Whatever story you tell shares light in everybody. And I think for me, you touched very personal moments for me that I resonated with. So thank you for sharing that with our community. And I think just also mention where people can find you,
yeah,
your links, and then we'll also post them down below in our description box, just so that they do follow
you. They
know
how to find
you. Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, come on, before we get into
the formalities.
Found me, I am... I would also like to appreciate what you do, okay? Because I know when you are the person doing it, it's really hard to, like, not see what you're doing. But of course, when you're like, girl, I had to go through, like, your page and just see what's what. You know, before, like, committing to the unknown. And you are doing so much for Black women, you know, and you, like, allowing us a platform to... you know, share our stories and
yeah,
also have a voice, you know, and not just because we're not stepping as one person, we're stepping for, like, as a lot of people, you know, so allowing us to, you know, advocate for ourselves and advocate for all these people that we're standing for is absolutely amazing. And also creating a network of people. I mean, you know, now that I also see that, like, the other things that you're doing, the other people that you're talking to, it's a, ooh, okay, I didn't know this was like a thing, you know, so allowing, because you're creating a community,
yeah,
you know, and that is absolutely.
Thank you so much.
So kudos,
yeah,
to
thank
you.
Thank you so much.
It takes a lot to have an idea,
yeah,
and step into it.
Both ways, eh?
Takes a lot.
Trust.
And a lot of people might be like, oh, you're following your, oh, great, cute. But it comes with
does
a lot. Committing to it.
Yeah.
Girl. You know,
yeah,
so well done. So
you guys.
So you guys can find me on, so my personal pages are, you can find me on Instagram at Khao Doll, because I'm a doll. You can find me on Facebook, Kaugelo Putwani, and on TikTok at Kaugelo Putwani, I think, because TikTok is still new. And Not Alone, I think it's @alone on Facebook, because we couldn't change it for whatever reason. @notalonesa on Instagram, @notalonesa on Twitter. Oh, YouTube, you know what? We kind of have a page, a little bit. We're revisiting that idea.
Okay.
Because we want to, like, step into, you know, when we have like a... Because consistency is very important.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But YouTube, coming soon!
Thank you, everybody. This is Sammy signing out. Bye!
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. And if you enjoyed it, share it with your community. Share it with your mom, your sister, your friends. Share it with your whole neighborhood. And we would like to engage with you guys on our social media page on both Facebook and Instagram at multifaceted_African_girls. DM us, and if you have any questions to our guest, please drop them there, and we will conduct an Instagram live just to answer all your questions. Thank you so much for joining us. All the details of our guest are linked down below, so do the right thing and click on it. Until next time, stay empowered.